saw some welcome progress on the reductions on Ireland's greenhouse gas emissions, according to the EPA report on 2023 emissions, which was published on Tuesday. Farming, as you know, accounts for just over one third of our emissions, and reducing them while continuing to farm profitably has proven a pretty tricky balancing act. So, how was this reduction achieved? Was it a one-off, or will it hopefully endure? And what could be done next? Professor Frank O'Mara is the director of CHAGESC, and he joins me in studio this morning. Very good morning, and thanks very much for coming in to us.
Good morning, Philip.
Frank, 4.6% reduction, while there were sectors like transport where it kept on increasing. Good news. Were you surprised by this, or did you expect it?
So, Philip, yes, it is very good news. It wasn't a surprise. You know, we could see the drivers of emissions. We knew, you know, things like fertiliser use, animal numbers and so on, that they had moved in the direction of a reduction in emissions. So we were expecting that. I didn't know what it would be, you know, so 4.6% was certainly at the upper end of my expectations, and I was delighted with that. And look, I think it's a great boost, really, for the many, many farmers who have been doing things over the last few years, things like, you know, adopting protected urea as their fertiliser, or reducing the amount of fertiliser they use, or maybe breeding better animals, to see that translating now into a good news story on the emissions front.
There's no doubt that farmers are doing much more than most in this area, but how much of that 4.6% should we put down to the weather and the fact that there was effectively less farming being done because of it?
So, of the 4.6%, about half of it came from both reduced fertiliser use and change into protected urea. Protected urea is a type of fertiliser that has lower emissions associated with it. So, you know, why do we see that? Well, over the last 2 years, we've seen a big drop in the fertiliser use. It's down, nitrogen fertiliser down 30% over those 2 years. And driven to a large extent, I suppose, or at least the stimulus, was the big rise in fertiliser prices over the last 2 years due to the war in Ukraine and the increase in energy prices. That really, I suppose, galvanised farmers into seeing, well, how can we use less of this very expensive product and replace it with other sources? And that means making better use.
So some of it was coincidental, but on the good news side, there was also a change in the regulations on its spreading in the month of January.
There's a whole heap of changes in regulations about the timing and the amount of fertiliser that you can spread. But I wouldn't say it was just coincidental. Like, farmers had to respond to that. So they had to take active steps to actually, you know, continue to be able to feed their animals while at the same time using less fertiliser.
But the logic, unfortunately, of that suggests that were the price to come back down again, its use would swing back up.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. That's where farmers maybe have to plan, and hopefully those plans will stay in place now. So we did expect to see some rebound in fertiliser use in 2024 because the prices have come down. I'm not sure whether we will see much of a rebound because the weather was so bad earlier in the year that farmers maybe couldn't spread as much as they might have intended to. But we would hope that the plans that farmers put in place to manage with lower fertiliser, such as making better use of their slurry, maybe being a bit more judicious about when they apply that fertiliser, and as you say, the maximum levels have come down, so they can apply less, that all those will remain in place for this year and for succeeding years.
Talk to me a little bit more about protected urea and explain to me why, as a non-farmer, it seems to me like a bit of a no-brainer. It's cheaper and it does the same job, yet its use is only at, I think, 23%. Why is it not being more widely used?
So just what protected urea is, first, like the fertilisers lead to some emissions of nitrous oxide, which is a very powerful greenhouse gas. Protected urea and indeed ordinary urea have much lower emissions of nitrous oxide than the conventional fertiliser, we'll call it, or the traditional one, calcium ammonium nitrate. So that's why we're anxious for farmers to switch to protected urea, which also has lower ammonia emissions. That's where the protection comes in. So why, and it is a cheaper source of nitrogen than calcium ammonium nitrate. So why aren't we further advanced is your question. Well, look, we have made good progress. If you went back to 2018, protected urea was 1-2% of our total straight chemical nitrogen. It's now at 23%. And we need to get that much higher. But I think we're very much on that journey.
Is that because it's less profitable for the merchants who are selling it, for the people who are manufacturing it?
I wouldn't say that really. I don't think that's the barrier to uptake really. I think we hear
farmers saying that they just can't get it. They'd use it if they could get it, but they can't.
Yes, look, sometimes you hear those stories, but by and large, protected urea is widely available now. I think it's a change. Any change takes time, you know. So we're on that journey of change. I think the cooperatives all have incentives of some shape or form to their customers, to their milk suppliers, to use protected urea. So it is widely available. But look, it does require you to change the way you plan your fertilizer. It's a different product than the one you have been using. So there are elements of change that farmers have to adapt to.
Now, our Brenda was in Laois for the Irish Grasslands Association summer walk on the farm of an old countrywide friend, Bruce Thompson. By coincidence, she was there on the morning that these emissions figures, as 4.6% good news, was released by the EPA. So she asked some of the farmers who were present what they were doing to reduce emissions.
I'm Evan Hunt, farming in Tubbacurry in Sligo.
Can I ask, how old are you?
I'm 27. So it's myself and my father in farm partnership, milking 120 cows. So we've grown from 50 cows in the last 4 or 5 years. The system of farming in Ireland has changed drastically in the last 3-4 years, especially. Mm. So especially since I started farming, the changes has been huge.
And with that in mind, Evan, the EPA announced that agricultural emissions are down 4.6% in agriculture. Did you do anything in terms of reducing fertiliser use yourself?
So I suppose we took clover on board. We're now running at 50% of the milking platform with clover, so that has helped reduce air nitrogen usage.
How much would you say by?
We're probably down around 40%. On our overall nitrogen usage. Now it's still early days. We probably have limited grass growth a certain amount by going head first into clover. But I suppose it's a learning curve too, and you get used to these things as you learn from your mistakes. You know, we needed storage, so we've built more storage to store our slurry. I suppose it gives us the capabilities of being able to put the slurry when and where it's needed, more than having to put it out because of no storage issues.
Hello, what's your name?
Jennifer Bracken.
Are you with child?
Yeah, I'm expecting. Yeah.
When is baby due?
September.
And are you a farmer?
So we're farming at home. We have dairy farm and dairy beef farm at home, and then I'm working in the agricultural sector as well. But it definitely will be a real challenge going forward for farmers to try and get the most out of their land and try and get the grass tonnage up with a reduced fertiliser allowance.
So my name's Ed Payne, farming in County Roscommon in County Galway. So we're milking two units, a total of about 550 cows.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's the right thing to do to try and use less nitrogen. There's other things now, lots of use more clover and other ways of getting around it. So implementing clover on the farm, being a little bit more maybe wise or scrutinising when I was spreading fertiliser, just making sure to spread at the right time and the right levels. So yeah.
So Ed, was the cost of fertiliser with the Ukraine war a factor?
So fertiliser has gone up in cost, but it's always in the back of your head. You try to keep your costs down.
I have a rare thing here. I have a Cork man who has secured two tickets for the All-Ireland.
Well, I don't know, we'll have to wait and see, but yes.
You're not saying.
Well done to Cork anyway, getting through.
What's your name?
Jerome O'Mahony. I'm farming down in a place called Drumleek. I'm a dairy farmer. And our milk goes to Carberry Milk Products, and they make Dublin nut cheese. We're seeding a new grass, it's called red clover silage, for silage, and that needs very, very little nitrogen. It actually is a legume which absorbs nitrogen from the air, and that will save a lot of nitrogen going out on the farm.
Was cost a factor with the Ukraine war and the price of fertiliser going up?
Absolutely, the fertiliser went up about three times.
My name's Liam Barton, so I'm part-time farming there outside Rathdowney in County Laois.
Yeah.
My plan is to go milking cows there next year. Look, at the end of the day, I'm trying to grow enough feed for my animals. I don't want them starving. It's very important, but at the same time, we are having a very efficient approach on how we use our fertiliser on farm.
There has been a reduction in methane, but it's only small. Did you yourself do anything to reduce methane gas in your herd?
methane is very hard to reduce, being a cow, not alone pops, but comes out the other end.
No, I know there's a lot of research being done on it, and in Chagas and the likes, and in Moor Park, so I'm keeping a tight eye on that.
Sure, look, I suppose with the methane, there's studies ongoing on feed additives and that, and it's hard to see when it's not on the ground.
Do you think you're going to try different things?
Yeah, definitely. Sure, you always have to be willing to move with times and keep up with the thing, or you'll get left behind. So yeah, we will. Those things are changing so quick, you just have to be on the ball and ready to go.
Frank, things are changing quite quickly, perhaps quickly than even some of the people that Brenda was talking to there are aware. When I bumped into you recently at the open day in Grange, I was really struck by the very large number of tools in the toolbox now for reducing methane that Chagas has developed and is trying to point out to farmers that are out there.
That's right, Philip. And, you know, as you say, we had a lot of those technologies on display at Grange, and we actually have another big open day next Tuesday in Johnstown Castle that will talk about all the technologies that are there for sustainable farming. So in terms of, it was great actually to hear those farmers and just going back to their fertiliser nitrogen use, you know, it was a consequence maybe of the price, but they planned around things like clover and so on to be able to adapt in the longer term to lower nitrogen. And I would
say, does that mean, are you hopeful that there won't be any diminishment or decrease on that 4.6% next year or as prices become more favourable?
It certainly, look, we as I said, we were probably expecting some bit of a rebound in fertiliser use. I don't think we're going to see much of it this year. We may see a little bit next year, but not certainly back to the levels of nitrogen use that we had 3 years ago. Okay. When we were using 400,000 tonnes. So, but I think, you know, those farmers, was great to hear their level of knowledge around these things as well. In terms of reducing methane, there are a range of technologies, and those farmers, I would say, are already using some of them, maybe a little bit unknowns to themselves. The big one being that farmers can do now to reduce methane is try to reduce the age at slaughter of our beef cattle. And dairy farmers have a huge role to play in that as well, because 60% of our beef cattle now come from the dairy herd. And what dairy farmers can do is breed better calves for the beef industry, I suppose using sex semen so that we have less male dairy calves, but also for the dairy beef calves, that we're using the DBI to breed calves with better beef characteristics that will grow faster and finish earlier.
Away from that, on the feed additives, I think, again, one of the reasons that there might be confusion is that the research chops and changes backwards and forwards. At one moment, seaweed is promised as a silver bullet, and then a year or two down the line into the research, seaweed isn't that promising. Where are you now? What tools are available?
So in terms of, as I said, the most immediate tool is just that good husbandry, so we get earlier slaughter of our beef cattle. In terms of additives or things like that that you might actually, you know, incorporate into the diet, there's two strands of research. There's feed additives and there's slurry additives, because about 10 to 12% of our methane comes from slurry. So on the slurry side, just to deal with that first, you know, we have evaluated additives that will reduce the emissions of methane from slurry by about 78%, somewhere of that order. We'll say up between 75 and 80%. So the technology is there, I suppose, for that to be used on farms. On the feed additive side, we've tested and are testing a range of things, as you say, seaweed, I suppose oils, essential oils. And probably the one that gets most of the attention are methane reducing and methane inhibiting compounds.
How many of those are farm ready?
There's just one, I suppose, that's licensed for use by the European Food Safety Authority in dairy cattle. There's some other very promising products coming through the system, but they will have to go through that licensing system before they can be used as feed additives for dairy cows.
Your job in Chagas is to do the research, to put the tools into the toolbox, to return to that metaphor. Your job is not to devise incentives or rewards for farmers to use them. That's down to the government and to industry. Without those incentives, Frank, do you think that there is a risk that some of these tools might sit unused in the toolbox?
Absolutely. So, you know, when we were advising farmers to use things like protected urea, we were able to say, look, there's a financial benefit to you as well. For feed additives or slurry additives, we can't say that. We can't point to any financial benefits. So, you know, for a farmer, it's just an additional cost. So there's going to have to be some incentive to farmers or some support to them to cover the cost of those technologies, or we won't see them being adopted on farms.
And here's a useful example of what can be achieved when industry does come up with incentives. The dairy industry realised that it was facing a public relations crisis in the treatment of unwanted bull calves. So strong market signals were sent to farmers about what they wanted to see happen. We saw that the use of sexed semen increased by 50% year on year in the course of the last 2 years. Rapid, effective, concerted action taken and results seen in a pretty short period of time. By analogy, the same thing can be done around breeding, can't it?
It can. And look, I would say in the whole sex semen story, which is a good success story, you know, back 6, 7, 8 years ago, we were doing the research that would allow us to give farmers confidence that this would be a technology that would work. And the advice plays an important role. And the stimulus from the industry, you know, the pressure, I suppose, that the industry was under, as you say, from the calf issue, all that coalesced to make sex semen now a widely used technology. And certainly animal breeding is another one of the big technologies we see to reduce methane in the longer term. And we will need the same sort of, you know, coalition of people working with farmers to see that widely used across the industry.
So the research in isolation isn't much use. Industry has to be there, and government and the department have to be there and say, now here, lads, this is what we want you to do, and here's going to be the rewards for doing it.
Exactly. It's a coalition of supporters we need working with farmers.
Listener question, is there a risk to human health associated with the use of protected urea? Are there compounds in it that are harmful?
No, that's been well tested, the whole efficacy and safety of products like that. And they've been used for many, many years, not just in Ireland, but in you know, for decades in different parts of the world.
Okay. Take me back to the other tools that we haven't discussed for methane reduction, those that were on display at Grange.
Well, I suppose, we talked a little bit about the additives. There's different types of additives, you know, oxidizing agents, methane inhibitors, there's the seaweeds. Seaweeds are something that certainly have promise, but there are many, many different types of seaweed. You know, seaweed is not a single product, and the ones that grow in Irish waters don't appear to be very effective at reducing methane. There are red seaweeds that do appear to be very effective. The challenge with something like seaweed is, how are we going to get enough of it to feed to a lot of cows so that we can make a difference to our emissions? And obviously it has to go through a lot of safety testing as well, because there's some fairly strong compounds in red seaweeds that bring about this reduction in methane. And we have to make sure there's no human health implications, no animal health implications, or no impact on the processability of milk that might come from cows.
And given that seaweed does such a good job of storing carbon as it is, it might actually end up being a zero-sum game harvesting this stuff to only put it into cattle.
Well, look, you'd have to look into all that, but I think we'd be probably looking to grow extra seaweed more than what's been currently in the seaweed cycle if we went down that route. But look, I think we're probably a long way from being able to say that seaweed is something that we're going to see widely used on Irish farms.
Low emissions slurry spreading is something that we have seen wide uptake on now, partly because there's just so many contractors who are in a position to offer it. What contribution do you think, or do you know, has it made to the 4.6%?
So low emission slurry spreading, the direct benefit from that is that it reduces ammonia emissions. And that's why the big push was there to use that. It has an indirect effect on
methane. That's ammonia emissions directly to the atmosphere, which is not a greenhouse gas.
Which is not a greenhouse gas.
But ammonia does turn into nitrous oxide on the soil, doesn't it?
A little bit of it does. But the big impact, or the big indirect effect that low emission slurry spreading has on greenhouse gas emissions, is that you can use less nitrogen fertilizer because you're using more of the nitrogen in your slurry. You're getting better value from your slurry. Also, you have much more flexibility in when you can apply and where you can apply slurry with that technology. So you can put it into a sward that you're going to graze 3 weeks later. So that means farmers can reduce their chemical fertilizer if they're using low emission slurry technology. That's the indirect benefit to greenhouse gases from it. And, you know, we heard those farmers earlier reducing their fertilizer by 40, 50%. It's through using technologies like low emission slurry spreading, clover, and better timing of when they use their slurry that's allowing them to do that and continue to grow enough grass for their cattle or their cows.
Joe in Carlow has texted 51551. It's my belief that Chagask made an error in promoting low emissions slurry with a single focus on emissions but no regard for soil health, water quality and microtoxins associated with the use of low emission slurry spreading. Does he have a point?
We've been promoting low emission slurry spreading for years. Primarily the advantage we were telling farmers about this was that this will allow you to get better value from your slurry. It'll allow you to reduce the smells, it'll allow you to graze the grass more quickly than if you applied with a splash plate. And there should be no difference to its the benefits of slurry on soil health if it's applied by a low emissions technology or a splash plate mm-hmm. technology.
Okay, while Brenda was asked that Irish Grassland Association walk in Leash earlier in the week, she also asked farmers how things were going generally, you know, as you do, and she was taken aback by how downbeat the response was.
David Kerr from Ballyfin, just down the road here. I'm farming, maybe longer than I should think about, to be honest, but it's definitely been the most challenging year in my farming lifetime, mentally, physically. The spring was just relentless. Mm. You just couldn't step away from it. It was one challenge after another between the weather and everything else that goes with it. Because if the weather's not with us, it's a very hard ship to sail.
Yeah.
I'm really concerned, you know, there's a little bit of a drop-off in attendance today. You know, there's a lot of negative talk. You know, fellas are a little bit broken. Like, you know, we can't take any more of this punishment from the weather and whatever thing, everything else. And we're looking for a break. And I'm just concerned, especially with younger guys. You know, there's going to be issues, I think, with cash flow on farms now because of what's happening. And I would be concerned about mental health issues now on farms really going forward, because we're into the month of July now and things need to turn very, very quickly.
And Henry Welsh from the outskirts of Galway City in Ordinmore. We're making around 300 cows.
Okay.
My son is farming full-time with me and one of our neighbours.
And a tough, tough year.
Very challenging year, Brenda. Economically, it was very challenging to start with. Then the weather proved really challenging. The summer has been non-existent so far. So at the moment, we're looking for a kind of a silver lining. We're just hoping that kind of best practice will get us through, best use of our resources will get us through. Very, very, very important, as we'd say, that we attend events like today and speak to our fellow farmers and kind of be reassured that we're not alone in all of this, that a lot of us are facing the similar challenge.
Mm. And David, can I ask you, mentioned the tough year that you've had, that so many farmers have had, and how hard it's been on people's mental health. What have you felt? What have you seen?
I've seen there last April when we were in the peak of it, just guys had nearly lost their will to talk, slumped against a wall, you know, at meetings, and things that maybe a spring that I hadn't experienced before, my generation, you know, and I hope the younger generation don't experience too many more of them. But it just shows us really nature has such an effect on us. Mm. You know, the climate, the weather, you know, it has an effect, and we can do nothing about it if it works against us. Yeah. You know, and just have to work our way through. But we are all here now, but it's still a difficult year, whatever way you look at it. And as Henry mentioned there, we're facing the challenges as regards fodder for next winter. The farm here mentioned the issues of possible cash flow implications, maybe reducing stock numbers. We have to look at things that maybe we haven't done in the past. You know, reducing stock numbers may be an anathema to a lot of us through our farming career. And now maybe it's an essential just to balance the fodder budget.
Yeah.
That's what we're looking at, really. Something I wouldn't have thought about before, but I'm doing it. Mm. Yeah, because you have to make the balance the budget anyway.
Well, look, gentlemen, I've held you up enough in the rain.
You're fine.
No, I really appreciate it, and thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah. Be kind to us now.
Be kind to us now. David Kerr, Henry Welsh, not newcomers. They'd be fellows who'd be well used to the ups and downs that farming provides people. So you can imagine how others not as hardened would be faring. What do you have to say to them?
So, look, that was a dairy farm walk that Brenda was at. And I think, you know, dairy farmers obviously been very challenged. But if you were at a tillage farm walk, you know, tillage farmers have had a very tough year as well, and so have dry stock farms. So it has been a tough 12 months. It started raining around the middle of last summer, and really it's, you know, you could say it's been relentless poor weather since then. But farmers are very resilient, and I think the key thing, and look, we heard it there, is about planning, you know, and plan early. Put a plan in place. We know that we're back from fodder, from our fodder reserves for next winter than where we would like to be. We're about 10% lower than in terms of fodder made to date.
Don't plan on last year being the outlier or the unusual year. Should we be thinking about this as the kind of the new baseline?
Absolutely. Look, I think since the big drought of 2018 and when, you know, we had to import fodder into the country, if you remember, during the summer of 2018, the advice to farmers has been to carry at least a 20% reserve of fodder over and above what you would normally use.
And increase your slurry storage?
Obviously as well. But I think that stood us in good stead for the winter just gone by. You know, we had a very long winter, a late spring. And while some individual farms ran short of fodder, it was available in the country. We need to build back up those reserves now. And there's a job of work to be done, because in the first half of the year, it wasn't great for fodder production. So farmers need to plan and talk to their advisor about how they can build back up those reserves in the remainder of the year.
Good advice there. But certainly my main takeaway from this is that while you have provided all of the research in the world for farmers to build on and improve on those methane reduction figures, without industry and without government also saying, here's how we're going to help you, here's how we're going to incentivize you, we're not going to get anywhere.
Absolutely. Look, we're one cog in the wheel, but there are other important cogs in the wheel as well.
All right. Professor Frank O'Mara, thank you very much for joining us in studio this morning. More after this.